Views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and I'm glad to have your continued listenership and support. So, we're pretty much at the halfway point of the season, maybe a little bit, but a little bit prior to halfway point of the season, and I'm actually kind of circling around a little bit here because the person to whom I'll be talking to for this podcast episode is someone that I've already spoken to a little bit before earlier on this season. It's Matteo Lizzeri. So greetings, sir.
Greetings. Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you for being here. Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this chat.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, last time we spoke, you were in Thailand, weren't you?
I was in Bangkok. I was in Bangkok at the end of a little bit of a road trip to the north of the country. I had an opportunity to have a bit of vacation before getting back to Taiyang Ski. And I was debating whether to go to Vietnam, which I've never been, or explore more of the country, and I'm very happy that I did. I took the second choice. And so as we recorded, I was in Bangkok at the end of my road trip, getting ready to go back on the boat and behind it.
Okay, so your adventures in Southeast Asia obviously lasted a while. So when did you make it back to your home and native land?
I made it back on the 27th of February. I was away for about a couple of months, and in those couple of months it was the bulk, if not let's say second half of the job that we did here at Jolly Ski. We divided our lake. I think we had an opportunity to talk about this. So whilst I was away, luckily my dad, Claudio, Gennady, they were checking and making sure that everything was done properly, and luckily so that was the case the whole time. And then, of course, the second I got back, I started skiing here. It was cold, but I wanted to see how the new Lake 1 and the newly created Lake 2 felt.
All right, then. So, yeah, so I actually had an opportunity to go on out and check out the new two lake site of San Gervasio, which for those of you who are even relative newbies to the sport know the name San Gervasio, and you've watched the webcast, you know, for the last few seasons, and you've probably seen that the lake itself on those webcasts was pretty big, but now they've put some rocks and stuff around it to kind of divide up one lake from the other. So tell us a little bit about that and how it's been skiing.
Well, I'll just give a very short briefing as of why this happened. I moved back home in Italy 6 years ago with the intention of managing the lake. And the condition that I put on my father and my coach, who are the founders of the ski school, was a clear intention of scaling up. And at the time, I wasn't particularly sure what that meant. But I guess that in the back of my mind and of their minds as well was the ability of having a second body of water. And quite quickly we realized that rather than finding another site, having a satellite place, the best thing was to maintain everyone here, use our structure, our clubhouse, all the boats here, and then try to figure out a way to divide our lake, which originally was quite big. The original length of the lake was almost a kilometer long, which is more than necessary, really.
Yeah.
And at the halfway point, it would widen up in such a way that you could fit two ski courses, right? Mm-hmm. But the wider part wasn't long enough, not even for an 8-buoy course. And so the idea came of purchasing the land at the end of the lake, extending the wide part of the lake, so what is now Lake 2, and then divide... shortening Lake 1 and then divided with a levee of rocks. It was a big investment, one that obviously was well pondered. But you know, we're running. As we say in Italy, if you want the bike, now you have to pedal. So I'm happy that we're here. Skiers are loving Lake Two. I love Lake Two. It slaloms really well. And now we have an opportunity to accept more people, which was really the motivation to do this.
Indeed. Now, you said that Lake Two is an 8-buoy course. Now, it would seem that that Europe has a bit of an affinity for that. I mean, considering that one of the tournament sites that we graced the last season on one of the TWBC webcasts was actually an 8-buoy course.
That was in Austria.
In Vienna, yes.
Yeah, the 8-buoy course is a very good solution for short body of waters, right? There are a few in the US as well, in the Orlando area, greater Orlando area. I can think of Champions Lake or Tiga Ski School. It is a good way to utilize a short body of water. And for those who are not particularly familiar with it, it's not that you're turning 8 buoys. You're still skiing the usual course that you normally ski at your lake. It's just that you can think of it as two phased out courses intersected. Mm-hmm. So that essentially allows the boat to launch to the speed that it needs to run into the course. Creates a little bit of extra space. And then, of course, as soon as you get out of the exit gates, normally those lakes tend to be over, like they're done. And so as soon as you get out of the exit gates, you pull out and you stop your run. It is like a regular course. I don't have any issue skiing with it. A lot of skiers don't. There is a little bit of a impediment, let's say, of the glide. So when you're gliding for the gate, what would be 5-ball on the opposite direction might be in your way, depending on how wide you run your gates or what rope length you are. But we are working on a system like other lakes have, to where that buoy would drop underwater, mm-hmm. so that it's not in your way as you're gliding. You probably noticed yesterday that and I were in Lake Two working in water. That's really to finalize this preparation for the 5-ball that goes up and down.
Yeah, I did see that. It's a little bit of an unusual system because from my experience, 8-buoy courses, you know, that have tried this have used the kind of winch system, but you've got some kind of like pneumatic system going on.
That's right. So you know this well, but for the audience, my dad works in the boat industry. And his biggest product is these like electronic actuators. So imagine struts that go up and down and can sustain a lot of force. So we have those on the shore that will eventually pull the buoy down under the water. The challenging thing compared to, say, a more an anchored course like you would find in the US is that here we have cable courses. So the challenge becomes, how do we drop that buoy without affecting the rest of the course? And that's where Dad and I are coming into a little bit of a friction. But Dad has spent a lot of time trying to think about how to leave the buoy somewhat connected to the cable and pulling it down without affecting the same buoy line. So, for instance, mm-hmm. the 2, 4, 6, 8 buoy line, right? I think we're going to find a solution. We're taking our time. We're not rushing. Eventually, it is an anchored system on the floor of the lake with pulleys that eventually, you know, with a rope, get to an actuator, to a strut on the land, and then that will pull the buoy down as it raises the 5-ball that you'll actually turning. You'll be turning in that pass up above the water.
Sounds like exciting times ahead there on that that Lake Two course over in San Gervasio. I actually had the opportunity to drive up and down that lake. You know, not for slalom. I mean, I tend to pull more often than not tricking, But I also had the opportunity during the course of this past week to drive a bit of slalom and a little bit of tricks on Lake One alongside jumping, you know. So I mean, I try to keep myself busy, you know, in the little bit of a break that we have from webcasting. You know, it's quite regenerating, I'd have to say.
Nice. I'm glad. And one of the things I love to hear from you, because when we created this second lake and the whole planning that got involved, obviously the idea was functionality, right? Like, it had to divide the body of water, make sure rollers wouldn't go between the lakes, so that people could ski at the same time, right? But interestingly, like it often happens with these jobs, you don't know the feedback of people. The first thing I hear is, wow, it looks really nice, which was, I guess, not intentional. You know, it just so happened that the rocks are white and they look good, that we just planted some trees. And people, before they even try to ask questions about how the 8-week course works, they're more about like, wow, this looks really nice. It looks different, you know. So I don't know, what was your impression? Did you find it aesthetically pleasing, I guess?
Yes, I did. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I was intrigued about the little signage that was put up all the way down on the divided line of rocks there. I can't remember what the sign said, you know, but I mean, it had some governmental purpose or something, right, like that. When the local government had a hand in this to a certain extent, didn't they?
They did, absolutely. I'll be honest, when we decided to do this job, the, let's call it, political strategy was to lobby a lot in the region, in the Lombardia region, to try to get some funds to help us towards this very expensive project. And then never really went anywhere. But to our surprise, at the end of 23, I still remember I was in physiotherapy for my Achilles surgery, rehabilitation. And I got this call from a journalist that said that money had been allocated from Rome, from the national government, towards this water ski lake in San Gervasio. And that was the case. We did receive a bit of help. And that's why on that totem that you saw there are like a national sports department and the logo, the emblem of the town, stuck on it.
Mm-hmm.
So they, and certainly, you know, we wouldn't have gotten the regional connections we had without our mayor pushing and trying to help us.
Yes, and the mayor actually came out a couple of days ago to take a ski ride himself and actually brought a friend along with him to learn how to ski for the first time.
Yeah, I wonder, in a Jolly, we actually have two mayors that ski. One is the mayor of the town, and then there's another club member who has been skiing with us for many years, Alessandro Tirloni, and he's the mayor of a town about 20 minutes away, but he recently became mayor, like 2 years ago. He's like 2 years older than I am, kind of decided to launch himself into this this political journey, and he won, and he's now the mayor of his town. So it's funny, we have two mayors skiing in San Gervasio.
Yes, and it sounds kind of weird. I mean, especially if you're listening to this from the United States, you know, I mean, it's, but I mean, that could open up a whole bunch of doors, you know, going forward. I mean, if you're looking to try and get some funding or looking to support an event or what have you, you know, reaching out to like local government, you know, I mean, could prove to be quite fruitful.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think particularly if you look at water ski lakes, normally they tend to be outside of major urban areas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in those towns or counties or, you know, general areas, it's always excitement can be generated quite easily. I don't want to sound rude about, like, towards our sport, but, like, you know, there's an event, they attract people from around the country at least, right? Your town might be interested in supporting, even just with small things, whether it is putting posters in town that something is happening in this particular ski lake. So no, we obviously we have a long lasting relationship with our town. Mayors come and go, but with the town itself, we've had a brilliant relationship since the start.
Indeed, indeed. Now we briefly alluded to the San Gervasio Pro Am at the beginning of this podcast. Unfortunately, the event didn't happen this year for one reason or another, and I actually wanted to try and get in touch with you and reach out to you. You know, when the news came through and when you issued your statement, I was eager to try and get with you to try expand upon that of it for whatever reason. You know, you didn't want to poke the bear too much. You know, after what you put down in the statement at that time. So I let it be, and now would not be a bad time to maybe address some of those things that came to light there, and also maybe talk a little bit about one of the events that you skied in and you produced one of your better performances, the Ricciardo Pro this year. So okay, let's
jump into it.
Let's do it.
Well, look, I'll give you the brief history of it, but essentially we got contacted by the Water Ski Federation of Italy around the end of February, asking us if we were keen to change the date of the San Gervasio Pro-Am from our standard usual weekend, which is normally the first weekend of July, to another date. And at the beginning, we weren't necessarily told why, but of course we knew that it was to place the Ricciardo Pro on that weekend. And I'll admit to you, I was still at Taiyang Ski in Thailand, and after a burst of rage, my wise father told me, take 3 or 4 days to see if other options are available. Now, notice that like by the end of February, normally we have already open entries, accepted amateurs, fill out all the spots, and start to have a waiting list of amateurs that want to ski. So obviously this was very, very late. I took my 3 or 4 days, and quite frankly, there was not a solution available. Because of course, before the first weekend of July, the schedule was packed with tournaments, most of which you guys webcasted, and you know it's a busy season in June now. The logical alternative would have been the second weekend of July, but at the time there were already Greek nationals, German nationals sanctioned on schedule, and the Austrian Open in Fischelheim, which is a record tournament that attracts a lot of skiers. It's a long-standing record tournament. I've done it in the past, and so by looking at this, I realized that the chance of not having a full field of amateurs on that weekend was very high. And I can't afford that. Quite frankly, the San Gervasio Pro-Am, as I had a chance to say in the episode that you guys shot about the European Tour, it's a tournament that doesn't generate money. If anything, we lose a bit of money. But we can afford the loss only if we have a full amateur field, which for us is 55 skiers on the water.
Yeah, it's a big event.
It's a big event. It's 3 days, 3 rounds of amateurs, 2 rounds of pros, and then the head-to-head finals. It was too big of a risk. And then if I'd moved it further along, the chance of missing pros would have been high. And so basically we communicated to the federation that we wanted to stick to the date that we had originally requested, both with them and with Water Ski Pro Tour, because those are the two entities that you need to deal with in order to get a pro tournament approved. Your national federation, which sanctions the event, and then the Water Ski Pro Tour to put it in their calendar. That led to quite a bit of back and forth between the federation and us. But ultimately, they said, look, if you, we're not going to sanction your event on the first weekend of July. They basically, after two or three letters of back and forth, they basically told us we are not going to sanction it on that weekend. Now, it's important to understand how sanctioning works in Italy. So most of the cases I've heard in other nations, an organizer applies for a tournament and a date, and the federation sanctions it on a case-by-case basis. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas in Italy, our tournament rule book dictates that all the clubs that want to do a tournament apply, and then the tournament, the Italian Tournament Council drafts a national calendar. Once that is agreed upon by the Federation Council, all the tournaments are sanctioned in bulk, basically. And this system, the rationale behind this system is so that there are no conflicts, so that the national calendar is smooth and there are no issues within tournaments in Italy. I have defended in the past that this is quite an obsolete system, and in the past it has been used to play political games. In this particular case, it has been used by the entity that organized the Recetto Pro-Am to force us out and get the date of their choosing. And so we took about a week after they basically told us that they weren't going to sanction it to think it over even more. But then we realized that there's no way we can do this, because by then it was like early March. And we realized, okay, this is not possible. And so we published it. We communicated to the federation that we weren't going to do it. We published that official statement. Michaela posted stuff on social media, and that was basically it. The president of our federation called us for a meeting, where he really wanted to understand the circumstances, because he's from the world of wakeboarding.
Claudio Ponzani.
And the message I gave him, which I uphold, is we're doing everything too late in Italy. We're always the last country to approve tournaments. We need to do everything earlier. And I told him, if we had that conversation in December instead of February, there would have been a Sangiovese Prime.
Probably, you know, alongside a Recetto Pro, exactly, as well.
Exactly. I mean, originally, at the end of last year, there were three applied tournaments in Italy, pro tournaments with cash. So, and one was going to be PKB midweek. So skiers could have stayed in Italy for 9 days and ski three pro tournaments.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, Tony, you know the history of my event and how I started it. We were kind of like the only ones in Europe for 3 years. And fast forward 12 years, I guess, or yeah, 10 years, we would have had three in Italy on top of, you know, Morocco, Monaco, you know, all the others that are there. So obviously it went from excitement as a skier to complete dismay as an organizer, you know. Mm-hmm. It was challenging. I remember I stayed here at the house and drove every day to Recetto. And on Thursday night, I was at the lake with Ekaterina, so Gennady's wife.
Uh-huh.
And we were looking at a beautiful flat lake, sunset, you know, and everything was calm. And I told her, imagine, for the last 11 years, this was the craziest day of the season. Like, people were still getting familiarization rides. I told her, you will be out of ice cream, of coffee, of drinks, like, you know, a completely different scenario. And here we are, just like, it felt strange, you know, it felt
surreal.
Really strange. Surreal, really. Now, nothing to say about Recetto Pro. It was a very good tournament, great scores. Recetto is an unbelievable site. My understanding and my feeling is that it was an insane inaugural edition. High scores, men and women, slalom, trick and jump. It was a great tournament. It just left a very bitter taste in my mouth that we could have had both if only the system was better organized. And I think Claudio received this message at heart. He told me that also in the other disciplines of the federation, the surfing, the wakeboarding, there's also this issue. And I received some promises that this will change for the 27th season, namely that, you know, everything will be applied and sanctioned at an earlier stage.
Yeah, because I mean, in a lot of federations around the world, I mean, to the best of my recollection, you know, tournaments or at least a rough draft of a season in the United Kingdom was always put about at around about the time of the tournament ball, which is around about November. You know, so I mean, if Italy had a sanctioning system that would have allowed those types of events, not only pro events but also national events in multi-category and what have you, you know, to get their sanctioning on the books, you know, before the end of the previous year, then
seems logical, right?
Yeah, it would seem logical. Yeah,
yeah, I think ultimately that's what I requested during that meeting in the federation. I hope the president will make the necessary changes. I don't think they will revert to a case-by-case sanctioning system, but that's fine as long as the application window moves from January to November and tournaments are approved by December instead of end of February. Like the reason why I brought up these issues in the past is that normally the first tournament in Italy is the International San Gervasio. It's this tournament we've had for 21 years.
Yeah.
Overall tournament. Everyone loves it. A lot of kids from Austria, from Italy, from Greece, around Europe, kind of see it as the beginning of the season. First overall tournament for them.
Yeah, but let's also remind people that are listening, especially those in the United States, that the school year for kids in this part of the world actually occurs later on in the year. Correct. You know, like May, May Memorial Day weekend is almost regarded in the United States for school kids as kind of like the start of their summer. Yep. But it's a good month or so before the kids get off school in Europe, you know. So
correct.
That kind of breeds a whole new other set of problems, especially where it comes to age category world championships and stuff like that, and even the nationals, you know, feels the effects of that.
Yeah, everything gets pushed later, right? Now, different countries in Europe have different beginnings of the summer holiday. Normally, in Italy, at the halfway point of June, that's when the summer holidays start. But take places like Switzerland. They don't start until early July. And then Germany depends on the Lang. But essentially, there are a lot of kids that come to our international that like are taking Thursday out of school to come and get a familiarization sets, you know. But the point that I was making was with that tournament, given that it's third week of June, sometimes we don't get tournament sanction in Italy until the end of March. So I can't get officials, I can't invite drivers, I can't organize the ambulance, the medical doctor that has to be on site. Those are Italian rules. So everything gets pushed later, right? So I really hope that Claudio takes this issue at heart, especially after what happened this year, and makes the necessary changes. Because everyone will benefit. I had people, skiers, that had to cancel hotels, flights, because normally for the last many years, the first weekend of July was the San Gervasio Pro-Am. Hopefully that can change. I'm not obsessed about that particular weekend. I just want things to be organized early so that I can promote the event, invite officials, open entries in a timely manner.
Indeed, indeed. And you know, and despite the whole Ricciardo Pro I'd have to say it's a scheduling debacle as far as that is concerned. I mean, did you ever feel at that time, you know, I mean, as the Ricciardo Pro was getting closer and closer, you know, did you did you intend to ski that event, or did you just want to say, you know, just give a two fingers up to whoever was in charge of that, and like say you do your event, you ain't gonna see me.
I'll be honest with you, after we published the official statement, the amount of people that asked me quite soon after that whether I was going to ski the Recetto Pro or not was more than I wanted to handle. Quite quickly, I realized that as a skier, I should have done it. I was meant to ski it. And in general, it was a better class act to show up rather than, you know, give the two fingers or even just not showing up.
Not only you, but your dad also showed up as well.
My dad came to watch, yeah. My sister couldn't bring herself to do it. My sister was like, I don't want to put foot in that place ever again. So she really took it at heart. And also I did. I mean, even though I decided to ski, trust me that I certainly didn't feel welcome there, nor did I want to be there necessarily. I'm proud of myself that somehow I managed to turn that into, competitive energy. I don't know. Like, I skied quite well at that tournament for my level. But was I really happy to be there? No, not really.
But I mean, the result that you produced in the first round, at least, I mean, you got into 41 off 10.25 meters.
So I got three in the second round. I butchered 39 in the first round, mainly due to surprise. We skied behind the new Ski Nautique, the 2026 model. And I, given that I'm not in the US much anymore, I didn't get a chance to try that boat. So I went, I took a trip to Recetto the week prior just to test the boat, and I was shocked. It felt unbelievable. I was very pleased. And then in that first round on Friday, things felt different. And I think rather my mistake was rather than just accepting that that was the situation and then just ski, I spent the whole set trying to wonder why on earth does this boat not feel as magical as it felt the week prior. But luckily for Saturday and Sunday, because I ended up making the final, I was able to leave that on the side and think, okay, this is what we have, and we ski. It was just something about the wakes. For some reason, the wakes felt extremely flat on Tuesday, and the rhythm of the boat was great. In the tournament, for some reason, I felt that despite the rhythm and the swing of the boat was what I tried the week prior, there was this weird rooster tail in the middle that I didn't feel the week prior. But second round was good. I got a three, which at the moment when I left the dock, with 2.5, I would have been in contention. And with three, I had high likelihood of making the final. You probably remember the S turn I had to make to make it through the boat guides. And then I made the final, and I was happy. I was happy. I was wanting a bit more than three in the final, but three was what I had on Sunday, and that led to a fifth place, which, to be honest, in tournaments with such a high, like, stacked field, it's probably my best score in the last three or four, best placement in the last three or four years.
Yeah, I got a chance to actually ride in the boat with you, and you probably had one of your better practice rides.
You know, you rode that ride is my personal best. I've never skied that many buoys at 41. And I feel that both you, myself, Claudio, we were a little bit in awe. Like, there wasn't a cheering, there wasn't, you know, we were just a bit like, okay. But no, I've been skiing very well, Tony, and it's very much a surprise, because let's go back to our chat when I was in Bangkok. I had another 5 weeks in Taiyang, and there for me is off season. I train, but let's say working out and gym is more priority than ski rides. Like, I'll sacrifice a ski ride for a proper workout at that time of the year. But the skiing was going well for the time of the year. And then I moved home and everything felt so out of control and fast and for so long that I honestly thought maybe this is not, you know, this is time to not to quit, but like this is not how I want to ski.
But to kind of draw back a little bit.
Draw back a little bit, you know, like obviously also I feel the pressure of the lake and being present on site. There was a few things that made me think, you know, maybe this season is not it. And then Claudio gave me the pep talk of my career. What he basically, you know, if I could summarize it.
He's famous for doing that, isn't
he?
Yeah,
he's good. Yeah, Claudio is really the best. He basically told me, look, let's see if constant reps make the magic, right? So ski every day, even if you don't feel like it. I don't care what you shorten to. Just do your reps and let's see if this thing slows down a bit. Because that was the feeling. The course was coming at me. Like I felt I was skiing 39 miles an hour, you know, which obviously I wasn't. But it was really strange. And then luckily the reps did their magic and the pass started to come slow again, which to me is very much fun when that happens. Like when I feel that I can generate space and really control the upswing. So, as I said, it's really a surprise to me that I'm skiing this well, given the preseason I had. But obviously, I have to thank Claudio and his commitment to my skiing. We can put it this way. He was really a lot about go back to your baseline ski, go back to everything you were doing last year. Let's not try to make any big changes. Let's just, you know, make sure that the reps do their work. And I'm skiing very well, but I got to be honest on it. It's a surprise. Like I did not expect this season.
You know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, I mean, you probably know this more than most, being a doctor in sports psychology, you know, there's this whole analogy, like, quicksand, isn't there? You try and try and try and you end up sinking deeper and deeper and deeper.
Yes.
But if you just let yourself rise to the top naturally, then that will do more for you than anything else possibly could.
Yeah, I think the quicksand is a good analogy. That's what I felt until I would say early May. Like the buoys were there and it was surreal. Like I would watch video and go, this is not bad, you know, like it's not bad skiing, but my perceptions were of lack of control and excessive speed. And I think, you know, constant repetitions, like I did a lot of what I call 1-2-3, which would be at my level, 132, 235s, 338s. Just getting 36 turns, 36 pulls, and really trying to get reps in and it really did the magic. I'm going a little further at 41 in training than I've ever done. Those are like just a couple of tweaks and a bit more, if I may say, recklessness. I skied Monaco was my first tournament this year, like mm-hmm. at all. And that was huge learning lesson. Like everyone in Monaco went in trying to run the pass. Now, apart from Charlie, nobody did. And so if you watch the score sheet, it looks like another weekend of pro skiing. But you were there, like people like Thibaut, Sasha, JT, Dane, they weren't going in with calculations about what the final was. They were going in trying to run the pass. And it's novel. And so I was very inspired after that tournament to go home and say, look, just try to go as far as you can. Don't make calculations about, you know, 3 is better than 2.5, that type of like pro skiing mindset. Just go and try to run as many buoys as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And
but at the same time, though, I mean, any lingering problems that you may have had, you know, could be solved, you know, by running more reps at a slightly longer line, like 35 or 38 off, 12 or 11 25 meters, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm a huge proponent of reps for my own skiing, for my students. I'm a huge proponent of mid loops. So I did quite a bit of 40 off this year.
I was wondering where all those bits of rope started piling up in the Malibu.
Yeah, there you go. That's what it is. Which normally I do in May. Like as I start running 39 more consistently, I do, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of 40. Which the way to do it, for those who listen, you just take a 35 off piece, you add from another rope, you attach it to the 43 off. 975 plus 75 is 1050. So that's how I normally train in May. And my rule of thumb is, if I'm doing at least a few sets in a row where I pull to 4 at 40 off the dock, then I switch to 41. I'm skiing very well. It's nice because it's a surprise given the rough preseason that I ended up having.
All right, then. So we're recording this podcast on Monday, July the 13th. Now, the next tournament coming up is an event which kind of like just popped up onto the calendar. I mean, last year. And not only has that event reappeared for this season, but the European Championships will also take place at the same venue a few days later. I'm, of course, talking about Poti.
Yes. Look, I cannot wait. You know, I've skied many tournaments in my career, but this one to me is so special. I've never been to Georgia, but one of my mentors and co-workers, who is Gennady, is from there, has told me, you know, so much about his homeland, about his lake.
And the Golden Lake, they call it.
The Golden Lake. I cannot wait, Tony. I cannot wait to be in Georgia with Gennady, experiencing also what, from my understanding, you can probably speak more with more knowledge about this, but it seems to me like there has been a revamping at the lake. Like there's individuals that want the club to grow, more skiing to happen. And
oh, yeah, there has.
You know, so to me, that's always good. And I look forward to the pro tournament and to the Europeans. The fact that they are back-to-back in the same site is nice, because that means we get a lot of ski rides in the same spot. I so look forward to it. The only thing, like I'm even more looking forward to Sunday night after Europeans, simply because I know the food there is stellar.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously I won't be able to feast during the week of the tournament. But on Sunday night, Tony, you and I and Gennady are going to have some unbelievable food.
Indeed, indeed. So far as Gennady is concerned, I mean, I can't wait to get over there just to behold the 50-foot-high posters that are going to be around town. I mean, because when they promote an event, they go all out.
That's my perception from here. I also saw it like Levani, so Gennady's son, went back home for a bit of a vacation 2 years ago, and he sent us this shot of him underneath this like humongous banner of his father turning an offside turn, you know. So I know the status that Gennady holds in his homeland, and of course what he means to water skiing in general, but specifically in Georgia. So to be there and skiing tournaments there and experience that aspect, I'm so looking forward to it, you know.
All right. So beyond that pair of tournaments in Georgia, in the Republic of Georgia, just to differentiate it between the Georgia that's in the United States and the Georgia that's right on the edge of the Black Sea. Yeah, I went there last season. It was certainly a sight to behold, and I'm definitely looking forward to that tournament. But I'm also looking forward to the events that will have us being the TWBC webcast, you know, going from one continent to the other in a space of like 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, I will tell you, I think my August is going to be way more stationary than yours, you know. but yeah, basically after Poti and Europeans, I don't want to say that my season is over, because I'll ski the Nationals and I'll have a couple of other tournaments, but that will be basically it. I will not come to the US for the remaining of the Pro Tour, just because I have to be at home, you know. But I have made the decision, let's say 3 weeks ago, to make a push for the Worlds in Australia.
I was about to ask something along those lines.
Yeah, it's novel. I really did leave myself open to making the decision whenever, let's say, like when the time came. Because obviously Francois in Taiyang Ski was very eager for me to give him exact dates on when I would be back in Thailand. And I really told him it depends on the Worlds. It depends on whether I do the Worlds or not. And as of now, at the time was February, I don't know. And then I say about 2 or 3 weeks ago, the conviction to do that tournament came. And so, yeah, I'll push. I want to talk to Jenny Labo as soon as possible, my trainer. I'm obviously part of the Flowpoint method, because I think a lot of it is going to be when to kind of rest from skiing a bit, get back in the gym at a not in an unusual time of the year, to then go back to Thailand and start the preparation for the Worlds.
Yeah, I think she's going to get a lot of business in that regard, you know, because I mean, I've heard rumblings from a number of different skiers, you know, trying to decide whether to even actually do the remaining pro tour stops at the tail end of the season. I mean, we're talking like Lake 38, which was moved from May to September. Mastercraft Pro, Travis Grand Prix. I mean, those heavy hitters, and I mean, I'm sure the folks associated with the Travis Pro, especially, you know, will want to try and make a decent showing there. But they got to look at the big picture going forwards, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, those tournaments are probably pushing early mid October, something like that. So I think you can stand like on tip-top shape, let's say skiing wise, until then. I know personally I cannot stay on that shape for months and months to come, so I'll probably train until early October, and then, as I said, unusually I'll probably rest up a bit from the ski, get back into some gym fitness, and then I plan to go back to Thailand end of November this year, which is way earlier than usual, and start the uphill preparation for the Worlds, and then probably go to Australia a couple of weeks before the tournament and wrap it up.
And that's where we'll wrap up this edition of the TWBC podcast. You see what I did there?
What a segue.
indeed. Any closing thoughts you'd want to throw out there?
Yeah, just a very simple thought. As you know, I was one of the guys that started the Water Ski Pro Tour, and for many years my pursuit has been, how do we make the very high end of water skiing worth the effort, worth the commitment? And of course, that's something that you and Vincent and the rest of the crew are part of on a weekly basis. Lately, I've been more interested, because I think the top of the sport is doing well. How could they do better? We need the pyramid to extend. We need... For every, I don't know, Charlie Ross or Jamie Bull in this world, there should be 1,000 people that run the slalom course and 10,000 mm-hmm. people that are towed behind the boat, as opposed to, let's say, 100 and 1,000, right? The extension of that pyramid, which obviously you guys are so crucial towards, is what really has been interested in me. So I geek out on things like the hovercraft, the boom bar, the big triangle handle. These days, I'm really, really interested in those kind of things. You know, like take the US, where there's a humongous boat rental culture. Every boat rental, like every pontoon, should have a wakeboard and an overcraft, you know, something like that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For those of you listening, if you know of that friend that had told you in the past that they wanted to try skiing, reach out, tell him or her that, you know, you have room at home and that you can teach them how to water ski. Let's get the pyramid a little bit wider.
And with that, we'll conclude this edition of the TWBC podcast. We'll have some more podcast episodes, especially from Poti in the Republic of Georgia, and a few more events are going on down the line. So on the behalf of everyone, including Matteo Lazzeri and myself, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.